Hi, Dave Emery here. This is For the Record program number 981. The Ukrainian Fascist Foundation of the Russiagate PSYOP. This is being recorded on October 17th of the year 2017. There's a lot to talk about. There sure is, isn't there? It is amazing to me, having grown up with the first Cold War, or Cold War One, which began before I was born and was in full swing as I was growing up as a child and then a youth. My early manhood was shaped by the Vietnam War and the attendant social unrest in this country, though I was very lucky with the draft lottery. Still, that event, the Vietnam War, itself a direct outgrowth or part and parcel to Cold War One, shaped my early manhood slash adulthood. And now it is amazing to me to watch Cold War II, not anti-communist, because Russia is not communist, but watch it in full swing, despite the fact that the premises of this are pure drivel. Beyond that, watching much of the genesis of Cold War II with the very, quote, alt-right, unquote, forces that the mainstream media and the GOP and the so-called progressive sector and the so-called progressive media were railing against down in Charlottesville, Virginia, a couple of months ago. Those very forces in the person of Julian Assange and WikiLeaks, a far-right slash fascist intelligence network, Eddie Snowden himself, the peach fuzz fascist, or the obverse Oswald, as I have termed him, and Glenn Greenwald, longstanding attorney working pro bono for Nazi killers, and also Pierre Omidyar of eBay. Those are the very same forces. And now with the PSYOP, because that is really what it is, of course, Russiagate, unquote, or Russian interference in our political process, something that not only did not happen, but is in fact the reverse of what actually happened. We have been and are interfering in Russian political process through NGOs, in particular in the Caucasus, through our continued sponsorship of Muslim Brotherhood-derived Islamic fascists aided by Saudi Arabia. It is amazing to me, however, to watch the media, and then I guess when our media began lying in their teeth, it really began that a long time ago, but as frustrated as I get, I am now at this point anything but a young man, and when the media and when the government and the educational institution or establishment in our country lie like big dogs and more or less lying in unison, really what can the average person do? Still, to watch now the Democratic Party desperate to do something to get rid of Donald Trump. Many of them are signing on to, quote, Russia did it, unquote. And it is amazing to me to watch this whole thing gather force and gather steam. Not only is the whole thing drivel, I've done a lot of information about the genesis of Russia interfering in our political process, and it goes back to people like Roger Stone, people like Julian Assange, the two being in touch during the campaign, and elements associated with the CIA, including Jacob Applebaum and Eddie Snowden, because Snowden was working for CIA when he decided, oh, gee whiz, I'm going to leak a whole bunch of information about the NSA. And the point man for Donald Trump's ventures vis-a-vis Russia is Felix Sater, S-A-T-E-R, with one foot. He could be thought of as a wishbone, with the CIA a hold of one part and the FBI a hold of the other. Slater himself is a convicted felon who has been working for CIA, among others, and is in all probability on a leash of sorts. But when one looks at Trump's Russian dealings, he, that is to say, Felix Sater, is the point man. And summing up, as noted by Tara Fractal, our brilliant and prolific contributing editor, if you look at Trump's proposed business ventures in Russia, they have all basically been rejected. He has yet to get a really serious real estate undertaking in Russia. But the history of Trump's Russia ventures are basically Trump getting rebuffed steadily to his business overtures. Again, the point man being Felix Sater. And then as Trump's political momentum began to gather steam, and as it became more and more clear that he would first be the Republican nominee and then later president, the gravitas surrounding Trump's Russian business overtures, the gravitas increased as of yet. Trump has yet to have a business venture approved in Russia that I have heard of. Nonetheless, we are being treated to various indications of the Russians basically are responsible for Donald Trump. Actually, the Americans are responsible for Donald Trump, especially the 48% of eligible voters who did not vote. The 52% of American white women who did vote voted for Donald Trump. The so-called media, including the progressive media, completely overlooked Julian Assange's right-wing and fascist links, including his liaison with Roger Stone, the longtime GOP dirty tricks operative, and Trump's former campaign manager and unofficial dirty tricks and cyber crime czar during the campaign. People overlooked that and a whole lot of other things. Suffice it to say that American fascism, which has existed for a long time and which has now emerged into the broad light of day, complete with marchers marching and giving the Hitler salute and the people saying Heil Trump and what have you, our media have got to say, well, who is responsible for this? Well, it must be Russia. Well, Russia is not responsible for the rise of fascism in America. And what we're going to look at in this program is the stunning extent to which some of the OUNB Ukrainian fascist elements in power in Russia, the direct successors to the OUNB of the World War II era. It is amazing how much of the, quote, evidence, unquote, of, quote, Russia, of Russian interference, unquote, actually goes back to the Ukrainian fascists in Ukraine. One could not exaggerate that involvement of the OUNB heirs. I've done many, many programs about them, and going all the way back to, for the record, 777 and 778, done in early 2014, and in turn accessing excerpts from the archives going back to the spring of 2014 and initially running through 2005. And none of them, by the way, are coming from, quote, Russia, unquote. We have covered the OUNB and the Ukrainian fascists in Ukraine at great length. And so I can only recommend to newer listeners that they use the archives, use the website, and get some requisite background. In this program, we are going to take a look at how much of Russiagate actually comes from the OUNB fascists. Of course, the Ukraine was part of the former Soviet Union, and they use the Cyrillic alphabet. They have Slavic names, and to the average American who at this point couldn't tell a dirt road from a chicken with lips, Ukrainian, Russian, man, they all have those funny names. They use that funny writing. I mean, and they're all foreigners, too. I hope they don't come here. I hope they don't immigrate to the United States, blah, 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 blah. Most Americans don't understand where Ukraine is or anything about its history. So blaming Russiagate, unquote, on Russia is an easy enough thing to do as a general piece of background information. Remember all of the things we have talked about in connection with WikiLeaks and its fascist and intelligence nature and underpinnings. For the record, 724, 725, 732, 745, and 917, right off the top of my head, deal with WikiLeaks and Wikifascism. Remember that Joran, J-O-R-A-N, Jermas, J-E-R-M-A-S, a.k.a., quote, Israel Shamir, unquote, a Russian-born fascist in the same political orbit as David Duke, is the WikiLeaks point man for WikiLeaks operations with regard to Russia and Belarusia, another large former republic of the former Soviet Union. It was Joran Jermas, a.k.a. Israel Shamir, who arranged for WikiLeaks to hold forth on the fascist-financed file-sharing website of the Pirate Bay file-sharing website that was financed by Carl Lundstrom. So in terms of Russiagate, bear in mind that Joran Jermas, the Russian-born right-hand man of Julian Assange, is in charge of WikiLeaks operations in Russia. We've also got the CIA's Eddie the Friendly Spook Snowden in Russia. Who knows what he has been up to? And again, it was the travels of Eddie the Friendly Spook Snowden, aided by WikiLeaks and Jacob Applebaum, in particular Applebaum, who has received financing from CIA in the past, that was responsible for the end of the reboot with Russia undertaken by the Clinton/Obama State Department. We're going to begin our examination of the Ukrainian Fascist Foundation of the Russiagate PSYOP with what might appear to be sort of a circuitous route. We're going to jump temporarily over to North Korea. Now, we have noted that there is long-standing, centuries-old animus in Japan towards Koreans, and in particular the pacifist popular sentiment in Japan has been severely dented, and There is renewed sentiment in Japan for increased militarism and military spending, this because of the threat of North Korean nukes and missiles. Recently, North Korea has apparently successfully negotiated a leap forward in their missile capabilities. This as the result of a successful test of an ICBM that could carry a nuclear warhead. Well, it turns out that analysts are largely convinced that that leap forward by North Korea's missile technicians was enabled with technology that was not only smuggled from Ukraine, of course, we're being told this indicates Russian influence, but it was smuggled from a factory that was under the control of the OUNB heirs, a Ukrainian oligarch named Kolomoyskoy, who has financed the Nazi Azov battalion. And this suggests that perhaps the goal may have been, and this is speculation on my part, to equip North Korea to become something of an international agent provocateur. Certainly Trump has been able to wax military macho over North Korea, and North Korean nuclear and missile capabilities have been a major vehicle for Japanese Prime Minister Shinzo Abe's push to revise Japan's pacifist constitution and ramp up military spending and increase the size of Japan's nuclear capability. I wonder, and this is speculation on my part, if perhaps Ukrainian fascist elements operating on behalf of, at one level, the underground Reich, and at another, the fascist international, which exists, did this in part to make North Korea the provocative element that it has so dutifully become. Certainly, I think their leader would readily play into such manipulation. There is much more to that than I suspect we have been told. I would note, and perhaps we'll come back to this, that the Unification Church, apparently an extension of the Japanese Patriotic and Ultranationalist Societies, has been active for a time in North Korea. But now, back to the Ukrainian fascist link to North Korea's ICBM capability. There was an article about that in the New York Times, which, of course, made the whole thing out to be, you know, this is Russia doing it. A more thoughtful analysis, though by no means flawless, was presented by Robert Perry in Consortium News of August 15th of 2017. This is titled, A Ukraine Link to North Korea's Missiles, and it reads in part, U.S. intelligence analysts reportedly have traced North Korea's leap forward in creating an intercontinental ballistic missile capable of striking U.S. territory to a decaying Ukrainian rocket engine factory whose alleged role could lift the cover off other suppressed mysteries related to the U.S.-backed coup in Kiev. Because the 2014 coup, overthrowing elected President Viktor Yanukovych, was partly orchestrated by the U.S. government's influential neoconservatives and warmly embraced by the West's mainstream media, many of the ugly features of the Kiev regime have been downplayed or ignored, including the fact that corrupt oligarch Igor Kolomoyskoy was put in charge of the area where the implicated factory was located. As the region's governor, the thuggish Kolomoyskoy founded armed militias of Ukrainian extremists, including neo-Nazis, who spearheaded the violence against ethnic Russians in eastern provinces, which had voted heavily for Yanukovych and tried to resist his violent overthrow. And skipping down, And again, the district, I should say, in which this took place is the Dnipro. It has a longer name, district, skipping down. Even earlier in Kolomoyskaya's brutal reign, Dnipropetrovsk, Dnipropetrovsk, that is the district in Ukraine over which Kolomoyskaya had been governor and from which the ICBM technology apparently used by North Korea to ramp up its ICBM program, that is where this appears to have come from. Even earlier in Kolomoyskaya's brutal reign, Dnipropetrovsk has become the center for violent intrigue that has plagued Ukraine for the past several years, including the dispatch of neo-Nazi militias to kill ethnic Russians, who then turned to Russia for support. Yet protected by the waves of anti-Russian propaganda sweeping across the West, Kolomoyskaya's crowd saw few reasons for restraint. Among the Kolomoyskaya-backed militias was the Azov Battalion, whose members marched with swastikas and other Nazi insignias. That's more than that. Their combat helmets, as shown in a Norwegian TV documentary, a screen capture of which will be in the written description for this show. The helmets not only feature the swastika, but the SS, the rune of death, the lightning bolts of Thor. And the Azov Battalion's chief spokesperson is Roman Zvarich. He was the secretary to Yaroslav Stetsko, the wartime head of Ukraine. And Zvarich was the minister of justice, the equivalent of attorney general in the Yushchenko government that came to power following the Orange Revolution. And in both Tymoshenko governments, he is an advisor to Petro Poroshenko and the chief spokesman for the Azov Battalion, the Nazi battalion financed by Kolomoyskaya. And talking about the New York Times article, The Times encountered another discomforting reality on Monday when correspondents William J. Broad and David E. Sanger described U.S. intelligence reports pointing to North Korea's likely source of its new and more powerful rocket engines as a Ukrainian factory in Dnipro. Of course, the Times bent over backward to suggest that the blame might still fall on Russia, even though Dnipro is a stronghold of some of Ukraine's most militantly anti-Russian politicians, and although U.S. intelligence analysts have centered their suspicions on a Ukrainian government factory there known as Yuzhmash, that's Y-U-Z-H-M-A-S-H. So it would seem clear that corrupt Ukrainian officials, possibly in cahoots with financially pressed executives or employees of Yuzhmash, are the likeliest suspects in the smuggling of these rocket engines to North Korea. Or I would add, perhaps intending to ramp up fascist sentiment worldwide and giving the Japanese a perfect excuse for continuing back down the road to fascism that we have spoken about in recent programs, including, for the record, programs 969 and 970. But time flies fast when you are having fun. It was also the Ukrainian OUNB fascist heirs in Dnipro who were among the suspected elements in the shootdown of the Malaysian Airlines flight MH17, skipping down in Perry's article. The MH17 case, Kolomoyskaya's operation in Dnipro, has also come under suspicion for a possible role in the shootdown of Malaysian Airlines flight 17 on July 17th of 2014. According to a source briefed by U.S. intelligence analysts, Dnipro was the center of a plot to use a powerful anti-aircraft missile to shoot down Putin's official plane on a return flight from South America. But instead, after Putin's plane took a more northerly route, the missile brought down MH17, killing all 298 people aboard. So apparently, at least one U.S. intelligence analyst has cited Dnipro as the epicenter of a plot to shoot down Putin's plane, but mistakenly shooting down MH17. U.S. reconnaissance satellites had apparently indicated Ukrainian, not Russian, but Ukrainian troops around the missile launcher that was apparently used to bring down that plane. Now, notice in the following story, the name Alexander Turchynov, T-U-R-C-H-Y-N-O-V. He is the Secretary of the Ukrainian National Security and Defense Council and the person who basically unleashed Pravi Sektor and Svoboda, or Freedom as it is also known, on the, not only the Ukrainian people, but on the world landscape. Skipping down. In response to reports of possible Ukrainian collusion in North Korea's missile program, Oleg Zander, O-L-E-K-S-A-N-D-R, Turchynov, capital T-U-R-C-H-Y-N-O-V, Secretary of the Ukrainian National Security and Defense Council, is issued a bizarre denial suggesting that the New York Times and U.S. intelligence agencies were pawns of Russia. That's a good one, isn't it? Suggesting that the New York Times and U.S. intelligence agencies were pawns of Russia. Well, that is different, I think. Quote, this information is not based on any grounds, provocative by its content, and most likely provided by Russian secret services to cover their own crimes, Turchynov said. Now, who is Alexander Turchynov, Secretary of the Ukrainian National Security and Defense Council? Continuing with Robert Perry's article from Consortium News. Press reports about Turchynov's statement left out two salient facts. That, as the interim president following the February 2014 coup, Turchynov ordered right sector militants to begin the bloody siege of rebel-held Slavyansk, a key escalation in the conflict, and that Turchynov was the one who appointed Kolomoyskoy to be the ruler of Dnipropetrovsk. I would add that he also, as discussed in For the Record 979, appointed people from Svoboda and Pravi Sektor, or Right Sector, to key defense and intelligence positions in the fledgling government. And again, notice this fellow Alexander Turchynov. We're going to be coming back to him later. Nominally Jewish, who knows whether he is a Borman Jew or not. Kolomoyskoy is the oligarch appointed by Turchynov to head up the Dnipropetrovsk. I'm probably mispronouncing that. And it was under on his watch that the shootdown of MH17 took place. He helped finance the Azov Battalion. And it appears to have been under his watch that the smuggling of ICBM technology to North Korea, which in turn has given North Korea a much more advanced ICBM capability, and perhaps more importantly, internationally, has increased the provocative value of North Korea's nuclear capability and tests and rhetoric. There was another New York Times story that once again took evidence of Ukrainian malfeasance and turned it on its head, saying that basically this was an indication of Russian hacking and so on and so forth. A physical hacker, a young Ukrainian known by the alias Perfexer, has turned himself over to Ukrainian intelligence, and this fellow is supposedly now the hard flesh and blood link to the hacking of the DNC. Now, I would note before we get into this that Ukraine is a major epicenter and has been for a long time of cybercrime, hacking, etc. It is one of the global epicenters of cyber malfeasance, so to speak. It is a major focal point of hackers. I would also note here that Perfexor, what he did was to design malware, something called a PaaS web shell that was used allegedly in some of the high-profile hacks. Now, I would note something that we have had on the record. Once a particular type of malware or once software has been used in a hack, it remains available on the dark web to any future hacker to use. So when APT-28 and APT-29, that's standing for Advanced Something threat, APT. Anyway, the APT-28 and APT-29 stand for something advanced threat. Those were the alleged Russian hackers of the German Bundestag, identified in the news coverage of that as being Russian. Then, advanced persistent threat is what that stands for. Then, APT-28 and APT-29, supposedly Cozy Bear or Fancy Bear or Mama Bear and the Three Bleeping Little Bears and Goldilocks, what have you. APT-28 and APT-29 used the software or the malware used allegedly in the hacks, the various high-profile hacks. The malware was designed allegedly by Perfexor. That in and of itself represents no concrete tie whatsoever to Russia. He did apparently design malware for use by fellow hackers and cybercriminals, including Russian. He was only in contact with them via phone and email, and had no direct contact with them whatsoever. And I would note that once the software, once the malware he designed was used in a hack, it was then available on the dark web. Now, note here that the individual who is the spokesperson, basically the public spokesperson for quote, Perfexor, unquote, being the hacker who was the key to the whole Russian business, is a guy named Anton Gerashenko. And he is part of the Pravi Sektor of Svoboda OUNB successor milieu in power in Ukraine. The New York Times, of course, spun this whole thing. In Ukraine, a malware expert who could blow the whistle on Russian hacking, by Andrew E. Kramer and Andrew Higgins, from the New York Times of August 16th of 2017. Now, note that in addition to the fact that this guy designed malware, they had no direct contact whatsoever with Russian hackers. He designed malware for cybercriminals of various kinds. Once malware has been used in a hack, it is available to any hacker on the dark web. In addition to Anton Gerashenko, note that the PaaS web shell designed by Perfexor was used in a spring 2014 hack, which showed Dmitry Yarosh, the head of Pravi Sektor, as the winner in the Ukrainian elections. That may easily have been done by far-right/fascist hackers in Ukraine who were touting Dmitry Yarosh. Supposedly that was done by Russia. But again, given the fact that CIA's cyber warfare capabilities are designed in such a way as to look like, among other countries, Russian authorship, and given the fact that, again, there is no direct connection between Professor and Russia, and given the fact that his web shell would have been available on the dark web after the Bundestag hacks of 2015, which had never been directly traced to Russia. Note that this same malware was involved in this pro-Privisector hack. Again, from the New York Times of August 16th. The hacker, known only by his online alias Professor, kept a low profile. He wrote computer code alone in an apartment and quietly sold his handiwork on the anonymous portion of the internet known as the dark web. Last winter, he suddenly went dark entirely. Professor's posts, already accessible only to a small band of fellow hackers and cyber criminals looking for software tips, blinked out in January, just days after American intelligence agencies publicly identified the program he had written as one tool used in the Russian hacking in the U.S., skipping down. But while Professor's online persona vanished, a flesh and blood person has emerged, a fearful man who the Ukrainian police said turned himself in early this year and has now become a witness for the FBI. Skipping down. There is no evidence that Professor worked at least knowingly for Russia's intelligence services, but his malware apparently did. And I would note that the Times did not stress this, but we have in the past used this quote. I will reiterate it for supplemental reasons. Quote, there is not now and never has been a single piece of technical evidence produced that connects the malware used in the DNC attack for the GRU, FSB, or any agency of the Russian government, said Jeffrey Carr, the author of a book on cyber warfare. The GRU is Russia's military intelligence agency, and the FSB, its federal security service. Now, note the following, skipping down again. Security experts were initially left scratching their heads when the Department of Homeland Security on December 29th released technical evidence of Russian hacking that seemed to point not to Russia, but rather to Ukraine. Skipping down. The sample pointed to a malware program called the PAS web shell, a hacking tool advertised on Russian language dark web forums and used by cyber criminals throughout the former Soviet Union. The author, Professor, is a well-regarded technical expert among hackers, spoken about with awe and respect in Kiev. He has made it available to download free from a website that asked only for donations ranging from $3 to $250. The real money was made by selling customized versions and by guiding his hacker clients in its effective use. And then it talks about how he wound up allegedly surrendering to the Ukrainian authorities. And skipping down. A member of Ukraine's parliament with close ties to the security services, Anton Gerashenko, said that the interaction was online or by phone and that the Ukrainian programmer, again, Professor, had been paid to write customized malware without knowing its purpose, only later learning that it was used in Russian hacking. Mr. Gerashenko described the author only in broad strokes to protect his safety as a young man from a provincial Ukrainian city. He confirmed that the author turned himself into the police and was cooperating as a witness in the DNC investigation. It is not clear whether the specific malware the programmer created was used to hack the DNC servers. Now, again, note that there is no physical evidence whatsoever that this guy actually was involved with the Russian intelligence services. He was a skilled Ukrainian hacker, and Ukraine has been an epicenter of cybercrime, hacking, and so forth, one of the biggest for a long time. He then turned himself in to Ukrainian intelligence and police officials. He is now working with the U.S. on the DNC hacks. And a fellow who is something of our window on to Professor is Anton Gerashenko, a member who's very close to the security services and a far-right member of parliament. Skipping down. Traces of the same malicious code, this time a program called SOFACY or SOFACY, was seen in the 2014 attack in Ukraine and later in the DNC intrusion in the U.S. Hackers had loaded onto a Ukrainian Election Commission server a graphic mimicking the page for displaying results. This phony page showed a shocker of an outcome: an election win for a fiercely anti-Russian ultra-right candidate, Dmytro Yarosh. And again, I wonder about how false that was. It may have been the actual legitimate result, but with all of the shenanigans involved in Ukraine and with the OUNB era's organizations like Svoboda and Pravi Sektor in charge of the Ukrainian intelligence services, it wouldn't surprise me if they were responsible for this, and if in order to maintain a facade that was taken down. How much he actually got, Yarosh, that is, remains to be seen. In fact, the Svoboda and Pravi Sektor elements were returned to power in various parties by that election. We've talked about that in the past. Now, what we're going to look at now concerns another New York Times story by these same two authors. And once again, we're being told that, wow, Ukraine sure is corrupt. What makes it so corrupt? Well, it is just corrupt. This concerns the arrest of a Russian-born Ukrainian hacker and his release and then his subsequent disappearance. Note again, Alexander Trifonov, who as the provisional head of state in Ukraine following the coup, in the Maidan coup of 2014, put Pravi Sektor, Svoboda, etc. in power. Note, again, this is the New York Times, but note how it is Ukraine and their security services working with the U.S. that apparently is a major source, or the major source, of the Russiagate, Russia interfered in our election, etc. Schooled in Scandal, What Makes Ukraine a Hotbed of Intrigue, again by Andrew Higgins and Andrew E. Kramer, The New York Times of October 7th of 2017. The arrest of Gennady Kapnikov, K-A-N-O-V, 33, a Russian-born Ukrainian hacker, and takedown of Avalanche, a vast network of computers he and his confederates were accused of hijacking through malware and turning into a global criminal enterprise, won a rare round of applause for Ukraine from its dispirited Western backers. By the following day, however, Mr. Kapnikov had disappeared. A judge in a district court in Poltava turned down a prosecution request that he be held in preventive custody for 40 days and ordered him set free. Mr. Kapnikov has not been seen since. Why is there so much noise around Ukraine? Because Ukraine is the epicenter of the confrontation between the Western democratic world and authoritarian totalitarian states, unquote. Alexander Turchinov, again, the fellow who puts Svoboda, and private sector in charge of the Ukrainian national security establishment in the wake of the Maidan coup. Again, Alexander Trifonov, the head of Ukraine's National Security and Defense Council, said in an interview, skipping down again, and listen to this very carefully, while still politically influenced, Ukrainian law enforcement is no longer a swamp of incompetence and corruption. It has been able to monitor Paul Manafort's former business associates and turn up evidence of Russian hacking in the 2016 U.S. election, in part owing to American support. Now, notice this. Paul Manafort was an advisor to Yanukovych. He was Donald Trump's first campaign manager. And for the record, 919, I noted that if you look at Paul Manafort's CV, it actually looks much more like he was sort of an advance agent for coups d'etat and covert operations to come. He was involved with Marcos when Marcos was being set up for the People Power Revolution after Marcos refused or was not forthcoming enough with the Golden Lily loot for the Reagan administration's tastes. And again, I noted that Manafort was most probably an actual agent of destabilization, getting close to Yanukovych in order to help oust Yanukovych, much as he did with Marcos. We're going to come back to Manafort later, but again, notice this. While still politically influenced, you bet, Ukrainian law enforcement is no longer a swamp of incompetence and corruption. It has been able to monitor Mr. Manafort's former business associates and turn up evidence of Russian hacking in the 2016 U.S. election, in part owing to American support. Again, this stuff about Russian interference in our election, it's coming from Ukraine. Reviewing very briefly from an article we dealt with before from the Nation magazine of January 3rd, is Skepticism Treason by James Cardin. I'm up to the epicenter of the Russia-admitted disinformation about the high-profile hacks. Came from an outfit called CrowdStrike. We talked about this in For the Record 943. Is Skepticism Treason by James Cardin from the Nation magazine of January 3rd of this year, 2017. Speaking of CrowdStrike, CrowdStrike's co-founder and chief technology officer Dmitry Alperovich told PBS Ukraine's artillerymen were targeted by the same hackers that targeted BNC, but this time they were targeting cell phones to try to understand their location so that the Russian artillery forces can actually target them in the open battle. Dmitry Alperovich is also a senior fellow at the Atlantic Council. The connection between Alperovich and the Atlantic Council has gone largely unremarked upon, but it is relevant given that the Atlantic Council, which is funded in part by the U.S. State Department, NATO, the governments of Latvia and Lithuania, the Ukrainian World Congress, and the Ukrainian oligarch Viktor Pinchuk, has been among the loudest voices calling for a new Cold War with Russia. So again, that's that is the co-founder and chief technology officer of CrowdStrike that was the epicenter of the Russia Did It allegations. Now, reviewing very quickly some information that we also talked about in For the Record 943, an article that appeared on alternet.org by Mark Ames. The anonymous blacklist quoted by the Washington Post has apparent ties to Ukrainian fascism and CIA spying by Mark Ames. Now, this is about the Prop or Not group that was quoted in a Washington Post story, basically flagging any number of media outlets and blogs, websites, and writers as Russian/Kremlin stooges or propaganda tools. And the article is excerpted at length in the written description for the program, but basically it turns out that the actual heirs, the actual authors of the prop or not, come from not only from Ukraine, but they are Ukrainian state hackers very close to Pravi Sektor and Svoboda and Anton Gerashenko, the Azov Battalion, and the OUNB heirs I have spoken about so often. Skipping down in the Mark Ames column, one of the more frightening policies enacted by the current oligarch nationalist regime in Kiev is an online blacklist of journalists accused of collaborating with pro-Russian, quote, terrorists, unquote. The website Mirotvorets, M-Y-R-O-T-V-O-R-E-T-S, or Peacemaker, was set up, now listen to this very carefully, was set up by Ukrainian hackers working with state intelligence and police, all of which tend to share the same ultra-nationalist ideologues as Andrei Parubyi and the newly appointed neo-Nazi chief of the National Police. The, quote, Peacemaker, unquote, website is designed to frighten and muzzle journalists from reporting anything but the pro-nationalist party line, and it has the backing of government officials, spies, and police, including the SBU, Ukraine's successor to the KGB, the powerful Interior Minister Avakov, and his notorious far-right deputy Anton Gerashenko. Ukraine's journalist blacklist website, operated by Ukrainian hackers working with state intelligence, led to a rash of death threats against the doxed journalists whose email addresses, phone numbers, and other private information was posted anonymously to the website. Most of these threats came with the wartime Ukrainian fascist salute, Slava Ukraini, or Glory to Ukraine. So when Prop or Not's anonymous, quote, researchers, unquote, reveal only their Ukrainian identity, it is hard not to think about the spy-linked hackers who posted the deadly Mirotvorets blacklist of, quote, treasonous journalists. The same article points out that another Ukrainian fascist named Alexander Chalupa has gotten very close to the DNC and has been leading the charge from the Democrats' point of view that, yep, it was Russia interfering in the U.S. election. In For the Record, program number 967, we went into many of the Ukrainian fascist links, of the fundamental Ukrainian fascist links, to one of the alleged Russian conspiracies involving the Trump administration. This was the aforementioned CIA-FBI operative Felix Sater, working with Trump's attorney Michael Cohen, and also a Ukrainian fascist parliamentarian named Andrei Artemenko. Andrei Artemenko was associated with Pravi Sektor and the OUN USA, and it turned out that he was working on an anti-Russian plot to basically supply power to the Baltic states and to parts of Ukraine by revamping the old nuclear power plants. That is detailed in For the Record 967. We'll come back to that. Or rather, I'll put a link to that program and the requisite articles in the description for the program. I would note that in the Kiev Post of February 24th of 2017, there is an article by Veronika Melkorezeva and Oksana Gritsenko. Artemenko goes from obscurity to notoriety. Now, people from the far right, some of the fascist elements in Ukraine, like Pravi Sektor, Svoboda, etc., the OUNB heirs, have been trying to get rid of Petro Poroshenko and establish a new, even farther to the right, government. The aforementioned Andrei Artemenko was taking information about Ukrainian corruption and giving it to the White House. And it says here, but Artemenko is not the only Ukrainian politician to reach out to the White House behind President Petro Poroshenko's back. Yulia Tymoshenko, the former prime minister and leader of the Bakhtivishnaya Party, had a brief meeting with U.S. President Donald J. Trump before the National Prayer Breakfast in Washington on February 3rd, during which Trump reportedly promised her that he would not abandon Ukraine. And Valentin Lavichenko, the former head of the Security Service of Ukraine and a political ally of Tymoshenko, says he visited the U.S. in December and January. And he basically was conveying that information. Now, Lavichenko, someone we have dealt with in the past, including in, for the record, 859, he is very close to Pravi Sektor and ran the SBU along the lines of the OUNB. And remember that in both of Yulia Tymoshenko's administrations, Roman Zvorich was Minister of Justice, that's equivalent of Attorney General, that put him in charge of the Ukrainian Justice Ministry. Now, we have been hearing about Paul Manafort and how he was an agent of Russian influence. From The Independent, that's a British paper of September 21st of 2017, as the Russian investigation continues, the focus has intensified on Ukraine and skipping down. It turns out that it was Manafort who may very well have suggested to Yanukovych to fire on the demonstrators in the Maidan. It was that sniper fire that basically sealed the fate of Yanukovych's regime, and there are allegations now that Manafort recommended that to Yanukovych, skipping down. Human rights groups in Ukraine also want to question Mr. Manafort about killings during the Maidan protests in Kiev in 2014. The lawyers' demands for explanation spring from the hacking earlier this year of the iPhone of Mr. Manafort's daughter, Andrea. One of the texts sent to her sister, Jessica, said, "Don't fool yourself. That money we have is blood money. You know he killed people in Ukraine knowingly as a tactic to outrage the world and get focus on Ukraine." The allegation here being that it was Manafort who recommended to Yanukovych to fire on the Maidan demonstrators. So again, according to his daughter's cell phone records, Manafort ordered the sniper fire on the Maidan protesters. That sealed the fate of the Yanukovych regime. And if true, that would seem to reinforce my initial analysis of Manafort as an advance man for impending covert action / destabilization. And from the Union, UNIAN.info blog of July 24th of 2016, prosecutors say public to face unpleasant surprise in Maidan killings probe. Now, this is about the discovery of weapons of what became known as the Black 100, the sniper rifles that were used to fire on the protesters. It said, "Unfortunately, this man, who according to our version, upon the orders of former Interior Minister Vitaly Zakhacherenko, helped the Black 100, i.e. the snipers of Yanukovych, flee Kiev, destroyed and drowned their weapons. He himself was with us on the Maidan." In other words, the person who helped get rid of the sniper rifles and helped to enable the snipers to flee Kiev. He was actually, according to this, one of the Maidan demonstrators. I'm skipping down. Earlier, Deputy Prosecutor General of Ukraine, Chief Military Prosecutor Anatoly Matyos said, "When public learns who is involved in this, people will be very surprised," unquote. According to him, information to be published may cause rejection, quote, "but the truth is the truth," unquote. So according to these last couple of articles that we have dealt with, not only did Manafort allegedly order the firing on or recommend the ordering of the firing on the Maidan protesters, which basically sealed the fate of the Yanukovych government. The fellow who got rid of the rifles, which were then dutifully discovered, was actually one of the protesters in the Maidan. Again, this points in the direction of a provocation. There will be more complete information in the written description than I have been able to provide here due to the limitations of time. This concludes For the Record program number 981, the Ukrainian Fascist Foundation of the Russiagate PSYOP, being recorded on October 17th of 2017. I'm Dave Emery. Ciao.